Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre podcast for the 27th of March 2016. My name is T.R.P. Watson, and this week I'm joined by Gareth James and Julie Raby. We're now going to talk about the last two Shakespeare productions at the Sam Warnemaker Playhouse, or at least the last two that we haven't done. The first is Pericles, which opened back in November, and then we're going to also talk about The Tempest, which opened in February. Both of these productions are done by Dominic Drumgoole, who is the outgoing artistic director of Shakespeare's Globe, and in a way, they are his valedictory pieces at the Shakespeare's Globe, although you kind of hope that he will come back as a guest director at some point and show us his stuff and do further good work in the future. Julie, you saw both these plays. Tell me what you thought of them.
I actually really enjoyed the whole four of them altogether. And I was just saying earlier that I actually saw four in one weekend, sat in the same seat in the pit. So maybe I deserve an award for doing that. But actually was really surprised how much I did enjoy the Shakespeare in the Sam Wanamaker Playhouse. And I think it's what you were saying when you reviewed the other two, Cymbeline and The Winter's Tale, how nice it is to see Shakespeare in there, even though the idea is to do mainly Shakespeare's contemporaries. And what I thought I really enjoyed about both Pericles and The Tempest was that they were clearly written to be performed in that kind of space. And you've got that idea of the mask. You've got that idea of using the trap and everything like that. So I thought they made the best use of the space I've seen in there. I thought Pericles was, for me, a play I've seen once or twice, and I don't really know it that well. But watching it, I was thinking, really is a play full of hope. It's got all the aspects of Shakespeare's other plays, but the reconciliation at the end really makes you feel that there's hope and there's a future. And there's a bit of King Lear in Pericles as well, where you've got Pericles the king more or less at his wit's end and then suddenly presented with his family at the end of the play. I thought James Garnon did a good job. I'm not sure he carried it all the way through in Pericles. There were just some moments I thought it just didn't quite work. I thought he was much better as Autolycus in The Winter's Tale, and he clearly played that up when I went. So I really enjoyed Pericles. I enjoyed Kirsty Woodward's performance in that. I thought that was really comic, and I've seen Kirsty Woodward do quite a lot, and she's really good at that real comic kind of part, and I thought she spoke the verse really well as well in that bit. The Tempest for me was actually a delight. I really loved The Tempest. I really loved the way that they used the understage for Caliban, and I really like Pippa Nixon, who I do know and have worked with, but I really liked the way that she did an aerial that was full of wonder, full of delight at seeing the humans, and using that sense of being invisible to go right up to the court and the king and all the shipwrecked court and touch and look at them in this kind of real wonder. And it felt a little bit about a bridge between the new season, because she really put across as this aerial, this androgynous aerial, that she was delighted to see these people. But also I really got a sense that she did want her freedom, but she wasn't an angry Ariel like Simon Russell Beale's Ariel. She was kind of patiently waiting for a freedom. I think the harpy maybe didn't quite work as well as it could have. I did like the way she did come from the flies, though. As we saw in Cymbeline, the flies worked really well. I liked Miranda. I thought that worked well. And I did feel a real sense of delight with The Tempest. I also thought Dominic Rowan was funny. I think he overdid the ad-libbing when I went. I think it kind of detracted. But overall, all four of the late plays for me have been a delight. Oh, and the one thing about Dominic Drumagel is they've created a cherub up on the musician's gallery. So if you look carefully, you can see that he's now painted on the Sam Wanamaker playhouse itself, which is quite nice, I think, a nice touch. So I don't know what you thought, Gareth.
Well, I've seen all four plays before several times, but I really, really enjoyed seeing them all in this season. And I really enjoyed seeing them in the Sam Wanamaker Playhouse. I'd seen the Julius Caesar experiment when they moved that inside for just one or two performances. And that kind of whetted my appetite for Shakespeare in this space. So I was determined to see these four. And of course, they were the most appropriate plays for the space because I think three of the four were written to be in indoor playhouses. They were written at the time when they had the Black Friars Playhouse. So therefore, it was very appropriate that they should be chosen for this. I think in order of them, I mean, we'll talk about Pericles and the Tempest, but I think I enjoyed The Winter's Tale the most. And I think Cymbeline and Pericles I enjoyed next. And The Tempest was the one that, even though I enjoyed it, it was the one that perhaps I enjoyed least because I did have a few problems with the production. As far as the Pericles was concerned, I mean, it's a very difficult play, I think. I mean, it's quite an odd concoction, really, but it is quite a fascinating play. And I thought it benefited a lot from being in the Sam Wanamaker Playhouse. Somehow, I don't know how this worked, but somehow the plays, and particularly Pericles, seem less implausible and less preposterous in this setting. Somehow that you can kind of get away with more in this setting. And this time, I think that I hadn't realised until this time round that I knew that they thought that it wasn't entirely written by Shakespeare, but I hadn't realised that the current thinking was that he wrote the last three acts and that George Wilkins wrote the first two acts. I thought the staging of Pericles was very simple and actually very nifty. It kind of really did race along. And in a way, I kind of was struggling to keep up with it. And it really was quite a fast-paced production. I loved the narrator who introduced the play and each act of the play, which was a fantastic performance by Sheila Reid. And at some points there was, I think, only one candle illuminating the space. And it's a play that kind of switches mood often. And I think, yet it sort of felt completely worked for me. And I think probably the music of Claire Van Kampen added a lot to this particular production. So I thoroughly enjoyed Pericles. The Tempest, I think I was looking forward to most in a way. The one thing that came over to me from The Tempest this time is that I felt Prospero, who I thought was particularly well played here by Tim McMullen, I felt that it was kind of Shakespeare signing off, and I've never kind of felt that with the play before. And I sort of felt it was, you know, a kind of, well, that's it now, a kind of statement. And I was quite sort of taken with that, really. I thought that the problem with the play for me is that it was much better at putting over the sort of royal shenanigans and the comedy than it was the magical quality. It didn't have the magical quality I think The Tempest should have. I didn't personally think that Ariel was the right take on the character, and I felt some of the magical scenes, particularly when the sort of spurs came on, were a bit naff, to be honest, and the singing at one point was a bit off as well. At Miranda and Ferdinand's wedding, I thought was a bit off key, and that was a bit off kilter. There were some great performances in it, though. I mean, Trevor Fox and Dominic Rowan, for me, sort of stole the show as Stefano and Trinculo. Although I completely agree with Julie that the added lines just pushed it too far. And even though I didn't like the take on Ariel, I did very much like Fisayo Akinade's Caliban, which I thought was a very fine interpretation. And I think, as I said, Tim McMullen's kind of elder statesman rather than larger than life presence, really. But I think overall, I mean, just seeing the four plays together, seeing them in this space was just a great experience. I'm glad I didn't see them all in one weekend because I don't think my bottom has the staying power that Julie's has, because those benches, you know, even though they do have some padding on them, they don't have backs, most of them. And I think that would be a bit challenging for me. But it's been a really great season. And, you know, whatever our little niggles, I think we have to be very grateful we've had this opportunity, really.
One thing that I think I've pointed out once or twice when we've been talking about this is the way that he's kind of over the years built up a, not exactly a repertory company, but there are people who keep returning. I mean, Brendan O'Hay, obviously Dominic Rowan, who's been in lots of things at the Globe. Trevor Fox has been in a lot. Paul Ryder, Sam Cox, and Christopher Logan. People like that. They've been in quite a lot of things. And if we're talking about saying goodbye, perhaps we're saying goodbye to them as well, you know, as a unit. Because I think that Emma Rice is maybe going to ring the changes a little, and we're not going to see quite so many of those people again, although, I mean, she's perfectly entitled to use whoever she likes. But perhaps we're not going to see quite so much of those sort of old stages, as it were, that we've been used to at the Globe. And maybe it's a way of them saying goodbye as well. I'm just obsessed by saying goodbye, I think. but I was very impressed by all of these. I really enjoyed them. I have a great fondness for Pericles. I don't know why. Everyone says it's a terrible play, and I always enjoy seeing it. And I believe it is one of those plays where it has such a quality of soap opera. It was one of the ones that they could always put on when a theatre was in danger years ago. You just put on Pericles and it would fill the houses, and it might not be the best play, but it's possibly one of the ones that can sell out because it is this great soap opera. It reminds me an awful lot of, dare I say it, Geoffrey Archer books. Those kind of big sagas of family and stuff like that. Yeah. It does have that feel to it, and it's something that I always like in Pericles. The Tempest, yeah, it just shows how well it's done. I mean, I do kind of agree about Pippa Nixon with Gareth. It's that I think we've been spoiled with Tempest. We've seen Aidan Gillen do it, and Aidan Gillen doing it at the Almeida, constantly appearing from the water, floating up magically. After that, every other aerial is measured against that, and you're never going to touch it, or it's going to take a long time before anybody gets close, I think. I don't know that there's anything terrible about this, but I was, as I keep saying, I'm rather fascinated by all the goodbyes here. And, you know, a lot of people who you've really come to enjoy and want to see in lots of other things. I mean, certainly people like Brendan O'Hay, not an actor I'd thought of, but somebody, I want to see more of him, I want to see more of Trevor Fox. I mean, obviously, someone like Dominic Rowan has got a much, much bigger profile than some of the others, but it would be interesting to see more of them, and you've been introduced to them over the years at the Globe, mainly, and it'd be interesting to see them go on and hopefully do lots of other things and become interesting to other people as well. We're now going to talk about, well, the plays of a youngish, according to us anyway, playwright, Florian Zeller, who has done quite a trick. Earlier this month, he had three plays on in London at the same time, which is pretty good going for anybody. It has actually been done before, where I think Richard Bean had three plays running simultaneously in 2014. And in fact, in that year, Richard Bean had five plays in London in all. So Florian Zeller's got a bit of catching up to do, but given that Florian Zeller seems to be something of a star of French theatre, it looks as if he could be going to catch Richard Bean up at some point. The plays that have been done are The Father, The Mother, and The Truth. All of them were translated by Christopher Hampton and presented by the Theatre Royal Bath. And they've come into the plays in slightly the wrong order. We started with The Father, which was premiered, I think, in 2015 at the Tricycle, and then moved into the West End, I think, for two runs, one small run at the Trafalgar Studios and then a much bigger West End run with a slight cast change. And then we have had The Mother coming into the Tricycle, and then more recently we have The Truth at the Menier Chocolate Factory. They have had three different directors. The Father was directed by James McDonnell, The Mother by Lawrence Boswell, and The Truth by Lindsay Posner. And they treat on slightly different subject matters. In fact, if you saw them in that order, and it's not the order they were written The Mother, The Truth, and The Father, but it wouldn't be uncommon for people when they saw The Mother having seen The Father, it's going to get complicated, they would feel that The Mother was somehow derivative of The Father. They're very similar subject matters. And The Father, which I think we talked before about on the podcast, is this play about the disintegration of this old man's memory, possibly due to some disease like Alzheimer's. And The Mother is a woman seeming perhaps to suffer a breakdown as she finds that her beloved son has finally left the family home and she suspects her husband of committing adultery. The idea of those two plays is that they keep rerunning scenes with slight changes. You get lost in the timing of everything and you're never sure exactly what the true nature of the scenes is, and you know, which one's true, which one's imagined, which one is going through somebody's head and being slowly enclosed. There's a wonderful idea in The Father of the set slowly being stripped away and changed from the family home that he shares with his daughter down to the nursing home where he finally ends up. That idea of you peeling away layers of memory as he's trying to get the correct memories that he's living under. And you have a similar idea with The Mother. And actually, when I watched The Mother, I thought it was rather derivative of The Father, and actually completely 180 degrees. It's completely the opposite. The Mother came first. It was written in 2010. The Father was written in 2012. So if anything is derivative, it's The Father. But it is, I think, the stronger play in the end. But in between these two, he wrote another play, which is rather more conventional, called The Truth, directed by Lindsay Posner, as I said. And Gareth, tell me what you thought about these plays and what you thought about The Truth especially.
Start with The Truth, as you say, with the middle of the three plays. And I actually think is possibly the best of the three plays. I did enjoy actually all three of them, but I think this is a very, very good play. It's difficult to talk about, though, without spoiling it. I mean, basically, we're introduced to Michel and his best friend's wife, Alice, in a hotel room, and they're having an affair. And then over the next 90 minutes or so, all of his plays, incidentally, are all about 80, 90 minutes, which is sometimes quite refreshing because they're very economical. He doesn't waste time. And what unfolds over the next 90 minutes, there are seven scenes, there are six locations, but each scene only involves two of the four characters. And what evolves is the sort of unraveling of this infidelity, really. It takes lots of twists and turns and kind of keeps you guessing right till the end. And I thought it was a very cleverly structured play and incredibly funny. I mean, really very, very funny. But not at the expense of the seriousness of the subject of The Truth and the infidelity and you know, what people do in relationships, to the sort of honesty or dishonesty, if you like, in relationships. So I thought it was a very much more enjoyable play than the other two. The other two were a little harrowing because of their subject matter. So I think this was therefore a more entertaining play, but no less clever structurally and as well written. And we have to obviously give a lot of credit to Christopher Hampton there for producing this translation or perhaps adaptation. It's very nice in the intimate space in the Many a Chocolate Factory. Lindsay Posner's, I think, you know, has given you a great production. Lizzie Clacken's design is very clever because by a sort of sliding of a screen, we can change these locations quite believably to somewhere else. And it's just a cast of four. Now, Alexander Hansen kind of carries the play because actually his character is on stage for the whole time. And he is brilliant as far as I'm concerned. But then the other three, Frances O'Connor, who's his mistress, Tanya Franks, who's his wife, and Robert Portal, who's his best friend, and Frances O'Connor's husband, are all also terrific. So I thought it was very, very good indeed. I think the difference between it and the other two is the kind of tone. I think the Father is a more thought-provoking play, as you said, about dementia, but just as clever structurally, or probably more clever structurally, because what he does in The Father is he kind of messes with your head so that you understand what it must be like to be living with dementia. And with The Mother, it's kind of similar because he's, again, messing with your head in order to understand a bit more about mental health of this kind of empty nester. So because of the sequence in which we saw them, The Father first, The Mother second, and The Truth third, at the end of The Mother, I kind of worried that he was a bit of a one-trick pony because of the stylistic similarities, but only stylistic similarities between the two plays. But now that I've seen this third and understood that the third actually came between the other two in reality, I think that kind of worry has been dispelled. And I really think he is a genuine find. I can't think other than Richard Bean of a modern playwright who's produced this quality work that's had this kind of impact. And we've got, well, I thought it was six more we hadn't seen, but I think it might be seven more we haven't seen, because there were four plays before The Mother. The Mother was his fifth play, and three plays since The Father, just as recently as this year. So perhaps the tenth one is known about but not on yet. Perhaps that's why I thought it was nine. Anyway, I think he is a genuine find in that period of just 12 years, you know, to produce 12 plays and based on these three clearly of a quality and being, you know, a very young man, I think 36 or something. We are, I suspect, going to see an awful lot more of him. And I think, well, that fills me with great pleasure because there aren't that many good modern playwrights around that you can kind of look forward to seeing their plays. So The Truth, absolutely recommended, as I would have recommended the other two, but for different reasons, for more sort of more for entertainment than perhaps for the thought-provoking reason why I recommended the other two. What did you think of it?
I was a little bit worried, but I was enjoying The Truth far too much. I mean, it did feel very easy. The laughs were coming thick and fast. I mean, Lindsay Posner is not somebody who is afraid of people laughing. There are some directors who are. And I thought it was almost going back to a much more traditional French play, a much more traditional French comedy. And I think I've talked about, when we're talking about Painkiller, the thing I was worried about with that was that they sort of moved it to Britain, and I felt that didn't really work. And in all three of these plays, Chris Hampton has definitely kept them French, but played with English accents, as it were. And I think that's an entirely positive thing. You keep the feeling that these are French people, they're different. That, you know, this would not work if any of them were English. I think most of them, if they were English, you wouldn't really feel the same way about them. You have that slight strangeness, a slight alienness, the foreignness of all the plays, which works quite well. I mean, I don't think it's quite so noticeable in something like The Father, but certainly in The Mother, and especially in The Truth, there is a very French feel to it. I mean, I don't know if that's just because I associate adultery with that kind of French idea of it. One of the things is that it doesn't feel quite so consequential in The Truth. And oddly, The Truth, I think somebody compared it to the Pinter play Betrayal, although Betrayal done in the correct sequential order and not quite so much over such a long period of time, but possibly just because of its subject matter, because you have two people who are basically friends and you're therefore, you know, committing adultery with your best friend's wife, which is dealt with in both plays, but they are very different, and it is really just that subject of adultery with your best friend's wife that is the problem in both plays. I seem to have better memories of The Father, and the strength of seeing The Father and being impressed by it, I think, really ruined The Mother in some ways for me. In that production, I mean, we should mention the cast was Gina McKee as the mother, Richard Clothier as her husband, and I think it was William Postlethwaite as the son, and Frances McNamee as, amongst other things, possibly the lover of the husband. That play, I found it spoiled because I just said, not knowing when it was written, I just thought he was retreading The Father with a slightly different twist. And in fact, what it looks like more like now is that the mother is a first try at this kind of idea of repeating the scenes with slight differences that he almost perfects in The Father. And when you come to The Truth, written in between, it's a fairly standard play. You might say it's a fairly standard sex farce, but it's not. I think it's a lot better than that. It's one of these strong plays with a strong sexual theme, and very impressively done. With The Truth, I was very impressed by Alexander Hansen in the role as the man for whom The Truth is almost an alien thing. I don't think he tells a single solid bit of truth throughout the entire play. He is lying practically all the time, which is quite a lot of fun. The other people in that play are very impressive, and Robert Portal and Francis O'Connor. I would like to say something particular for Tanya Franks. There is a moment in the last scene with Tanya Franks which tells you something of the real truth, and I was very impressed by her in that moment, and it is an almost silent moment. It comes as a realisation, and I was very impressed by her in that. I don't want to say he does look very promising, because I think he's already fulfilled any promise he might have had. He does seem to be very firmly established. I mean, his plays, The Mother and The Father, both won Molière Awards, which are equivalent of the Olivier's, and I can see why they would, and it would be very interesting to see his other plays. I suspect that Christopher Hampton, who is another playwright who I think once had three plays on the West End at the same time, I think he's kind of adopted him in much in the way that Christopher Hampton also gave us Yasmina Reza He sort of adopts these playwrights, puts in cracking translations, and I much prefer his translations to his actual plays, which is a bit of an indictment of him, I think. But he is able to introduce these playwrights to us and really make them live in English, and I think serve them extremely well.
I think we shouldn't underestimate the translator, really. I mean, I think that translators are more adapters, because I think it's clearly obviously more than just a literal translation. And I think that Christopher Hampton has proved that he is a master of this. I'm not sure I agree with you that this is the more French of the plays because of the attitude of the French to fidelity. I think there's been a convergence between our countries, perhaps, in that context. And even though clearly, you know, you have French character names and French settings, I didn't feel that this was that different. I think this could just as easily have been British characters, although I'm sort of happy they've kept that setting. I just wish my French was better so that I could see this play or any of his plays in both languages and really understand, you know, what Christopher Hampton has done. But sadly, my linguistic abilities are not, therefore I'm not able to do that. And, you know, you'd have to be totally bilingual to understand, I think. Does anything happen here when you translate it? Perhaps I do have a bilingual friend. Perhaps at some point I should find a production in both languages and take her and get her to comment on it. But Zeller is clearly, you know, I mean, he's very clever structurally. We now know that, I think, from the three plays. So he pays a lot of attention to structure, and I particularly like plays that are cleverly structured. The writing, whether it be Hampton or him or both, is very economical in that they don't waste time, and I think there's a lot to be said for that. And I think that they are kind of universal subjects. You know, we're talking about dementia, mental health, following empty nesting and fidelity. And, you know, they are universal subjects which are being tackled here and tackled in a way that does make us think, as well as in the case of the truth, make us laugh as well. Having now seen all three, I feel very much that this man's here to stay.
We're now going to talk about If You Kiss Me, Kiss Me, which is a theatre piece, pretty much a concert, conceived by Jane Horrocks with the choreographer Aletta Collins, and deals with Jane Horrocks looking back at her youth and really picking some strange songs of the Northwest, well, songs of the Northwest, which are... It says the Northwest. I mean, I think mostly Manchester. It's mostly Manchester late 70s, early 80s songs. I have to confess, I only recognise one Buzzcocks song in there. But we have a lot of songs from people like The Fall, New Order, and I think Human League as well, Soft Cell, and The Smiths. There was a famous Sex Pistols concert in Manchester, and a number of bands came out of that experience of seeing the Sex Pistols, and there were people like Morrissey from the Smiths, and I think people who went on to form Joy Division, and Marky Smith, who is pretty much The Fall. And these people were inspired by it. I mean, it's also another thing said of the various Sex Pistols concerts, both in London and in possibly in Manchester, that if everybody who said they'd been to that concert, they would have overflowed the venues by about 10 times or even 100 times. In some cases, they were playing to very small venues. But what I think Jane Horrocks wants to be saying here is that the way that the Sex Pistols changed music, and you had these responses, and she's dealing with the Northwest, the Manchester sound. I think we have other bands that may be based around Liverpool, and also I think Human League is a Yorkshire, maybe a Sheffield band, don't quote me. And we get a slightly different experience. If I experience sort of punk and new wave, I was a little bit young, and I experienced it really through more London-based bands. Squeeze and The Clash and things like that are much more of my late 70s, early 80s bands than The Smiths or The Fall. There's a rather fun song by Mitch Benn called I Never Had a Smiths Phase, and I think that if you want a single-line review for this play, that's it. And I'm not entirely sure this is a play. It's choreographed, so we have dancers dancing around Jane Horrocks as she performs. We have a live band made up of her musical director Kipper, together with the Damned, rather wonderfully named Rat Scabies, who plays the drums and interacts slightly with the actual piece. But I mean, it is mostly about the choreography around what Jane Horrocks is doing. We have a very impressive design by Bunny Christie, I think, where there is this enormous double mains plug socket with a plug in, which they can occasionally sit on. I don't quite know the reason for that, and it is slightly anachronistic. We didn't have double sockets like that in the 1970s, if I remember rightly. It is a little bit odd, but really, you know, I'm not a great dance person. It didn't feel enough like a dance piece. It really did feel like a concert. Now, of course, Jane Horrocks, an actress I have admired for years and years. I wouldn't normally go to something as musical as this, if you personal preference, but Jane Horrocks, as I said, I absolutely love her, and she can almost do no wrong, and she's always been a very impressive singer, and I think she's very impressive in this. But at the end of the day, it is really just a concert with some extra dancing, and I think if you take it on those terms, it's good. As I said, I was unfamiliar with the music, and I didn't entirely enjoy it, although it is all very well performed, I thought. But it is, I think, a good piece, if not really theatre for me. What do you think about it, Gareth?
Well, I think you're a bit more positive about it than I am, to be honest. I mean, I was actually rather looking forward to it, because like you, I do like Jane Horrocks. I actually like modern dance and do go to modern dance. And the late 70s was a very good period of music for me. And therefore, I was kind of thinking, ooh, this is going to be fun. Well, actually, the fun is about the last word I'd use of it. I mean, I found it completely charmless and quite self-indulgent, really. Now, part of the problem is that Jane Horrocks' view of the late 70s and my view of the late 70s, as you kind of touched on, is very different. So while she was listening to all this, and I thought, very dull and depressing music, I was sort of listening to Graham Parker and the Rumour and Elvis Costello and Squeeze and Joe Jackson. So we have a different soundtrack to the same period of time, her and I. And I think it is a concert. The choreography by Aletta Collins is okay. It's a bit quirky. And she seems to be sort of taking the lead from the lyrics, but that didn't kind of make that much sense to me, really. And I did quite like Bunny Christie's kind of monochrome design, although, again, I don't think it necessarily meant anything, or didn't to me anyway. The band who play live on stage are very good. I think my recollection of her singing in the days of things like Little Voice was that she did have a very good voice, but either the songs didn't suit her or she doesn't have such a good voice now. I didn't think the singer was that great. She's trying for a Debbie Harry look, but was a lot less charismatic than Debbie Harry. She hardly broke a smile until the curtain call. There were a few words of intro and a few words of outro, as it were, which I think was trying to put the songs into context, but that seemed a bit pointless to me. I just thought it was a very dull hour. It wasn't even an hour, to be honest, but I just thought it was really very dull. And you can like bits of it, but overall, I felt a bit cheated, really. I thought it was a vanity project, and I thought it was a bit of a dud. And, you know, I mean, the top price tickets for this at the Young Vic were £35. And, you know, at more than 50p a minute, that's kind of more expensive than a West End musical. So I was hugely disappointed, I'm afraid.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the Assetto named London Theatre Podcast page on Facebook, on the web we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you, goodbye.